This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is made possible by you, the listener. We are approaching the end of another amazing year with SQPN. We've been able to reach people from all over the world, and you're one of them, with engaging, entertaining, and inspiring programs. Now, for the next year, we want to ask for your help. We hope that you can help us with your gift or monthly donation and support us that way and help us to continue what we do and to launch even more exciting new media initiatives. You can go to sqpn.com/donate to find out how you can help. SQPN, we are here for you and we are here thanks to you. And here is the show.
Why do you want to go to Storybrooke?
Because my daughter needs me. And now I'm going to give her the one thing she's always wanted. Your heart. Goodbye, Snow.
No! Emma!
Oh, you foolish girl. Don't you know? Love is weakness.
No. It's strength.
That is a great subject for discussion.
Well, I think that's the first time that one of the characters of Once Upon a Time has really launched a show. Well, that's an interesting topic for a discussion, because that is exactly why we are here at The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, to discuss this episode of Once Upon a Time called The Queen of Hearts. And joining me, you already hear them in the background, are the panel members. Starting, well, let's start with the man first. Well, the man, David Hentlows. Hey, thank you, David, for joining us. How's life over there?
Doing good, Father.
Excellent. Also joining us from Groningen, the Netherlands, where it's not snowing. And I'm in the same country, and here I've got a huge amount of snow outside the studio. Inge Loods, good morning, Inge.
Good morning. It's cold, though.
It is very, very cold, but, well, there fortunately are places in the world where it's not cold at all, and the sisters Lisa and Shelley are in that part of the world where it's 80 degrees Fahrenheit?
That's right. Good morning, Father.
Good morning.
Apparently the flowers are in bloom where you live.
It is. It's beautiful here in Texas. We should get a little colder, though.
Well, you can have a bit of our cold and a bit of our hot chocolate over here, because it is really winter. Hey, we're going to talk about the winter finale of Once Upon a Time. There's going to be this intermission for a couple of weeks before the show starts again in 2013. And as usual, this the final show before the holidays is always kind of like a mini finale, and so it wraps up a couple of storylines and it has a bit more profile than the other episodes. And so we got plenty of stuff to talk about, and of course the big game that we're playing while recording this podcast is the prediction game. We speculate about what's going to happen, and today I think we had some winners and we had some losers. So but before we get to that, let's first ask the sisters in warm, beautiful Texas, what did you think of the show?
You go first. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. It's awesome. Very satisfying, very fulfilling. Cheer, cheer, cheer. You know what? After the last few weeks, the last few episodes have not been my favorites, and I've been kind of like, eh. This one, just they did a great job wrapping up. They gave us so many answers. They gave us so many warm moments. And then, of course, lead us into a whole lot of more questions of what's coming up. So I think they knocked it out of the park for me.
What about you, David? David, are you still there? There he is.
Microphone issue there.
I thought there was a magical spell, like a the silence spell.
Oh, my wife would use that if that existed.
I think a lot of wives would use that on their husband if they could. You tapped into a market there. What did you think?
Work on that. I thought this episode was great. It wrapped up a lot of things. The last couple episodes have they've had some great character development things, but I was afraid that they were just leaning into some areas where they'd be like, they're going to be in the, like, half of them are going to be in the fairy tale world for like the rest of the season, and just a whole bunch of lingering stuff. But they've managed to at least give us a good note to end the year on.
Absolutely. What about you, Inge?
Well, the first part was a little bit disappointing. I had hoped that the introduction of the Queen of Hearts would be more enigmatic, but instead, Hook is just asking, "Well, I'm looking for Cora," and then very out of character, she just throws off her mask and says, "Well, here she is, known as Your Majesty." And I was a little bit disappointed in that, but the rest of the episode was great. I really liked it.
That's a very good point. I mean, we've been waiting for a return to Wonderland, and we've been talking for so many weeks about the identity of the Queen of Hearts, and the reveal was a bit underwhelming, almost as if they didn't have time to properly, kind of heighten the tension again. And we hardly get to see Wonderland. It's just this one path, and I felt a bit robbed of the moment, but then again, just looking at the overall balance of the last episode, they had a lot of things to wrap up, and I guess they just wanted to get at least Emma and Snow back to Storybrooke before the winter break, and so a certain rush was probably necessary to be able to end that on a high note. But I would have loved to see a little bit more happening there in Wonderland.
I'm and a little sorry that Deborah's not here with us, because I wanted to say, "Ha ha, I told you so."
Well,
she took the mask away, and I was like, "I knew it! I knew it!"
Yes, I think that the thing that gave it away for me that she had to be Cora was I was absolutely convinced that it had to be someone we already knew. Otherwise, you do a reveal and it's a whole new character. It's like, why hide that person? And there were enhancements of screenshots of that one first episode where we saw the Queen of Hearts. And I remember that they showed there was a little bit of hair sticking out of the whatever it was, the thing over her head. And it was exactly the same color and the same type of hair that we have seen on Cora before. So,
but it was a different actress the first time around. It was a different actress, Jennifer Kearney.
But wasn't that just a way to throw us off?
Well, apparently we only get to meet Cora in the episode after that. So maybe she wasn't cast yet when they recorded that.
Could be. Or it could just be a fake actress.
Or a decoy or something like that.
Yeah, something to.
But it was so clear because of the hearts and all the hints that were left. So everybody already knew who was the Queen of Hearts. So maybe that's also a reason that they just like, we know you know. So here she is.
Now, what I didn't understand is, Why bother hiding yourself? Why being so mysterious and speak through this strange, what is it, like an earpiece or like a horn? What's the use of that? I just couldn't figure that out. It's like, why is she this mystery person?
My thought is they're going to give us you know how they are. They give us a little bit, and then next season they'll go back and give us more. So,
good point. Yeah, good point. Actually, we
teased us with it. So we'll go back and we'll find out how she got there and why. And we
You're
know
right.
how she got there. Well, yes. I mean, why she's all of that. So how the father got there. I thought it was fascinating to find out how Cora and Hook got together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting. Not what I was expecting at all.
And that Cora's heart isn't in her body. So just like Rumpelstiltskin, how's that going to come into play in the second half of the season? Because Rumpelstiltskin, you need the knife. And we've speculated that August has the knife, although we don't know why or how. But nevertheless, Cora, her heart's not in her body. So her heart's going to have to be back in
Davy Jones Lockett
somewhere, or Wonderland somewhere. Yeah,
that's a good question. Where's Cora's heart?
And I don't think we've seen the end of Mulan and Aurora. So clearly, second half of the season, we're going to have to establish some sort of a portal to go back into fairy tale world and be able to move between the two, or between multiple. Well, no, the multiple worlds have been destroyed, haven't they? No, maybe not, because we thought Cora was still in Wonderland, but she had been brought back by Hook.
She traveled back with Hook using the net.
So she is definitely back in Fairy Tale. Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting to see what happened after the moment she's pushed through the mirror and then get that story. And that will probably explain why she is this mystery person or she hides her identity. I don't know. There might be a threat to her, perhaps, you know, be revealing who she is. Perhaps there's someone in Wonderland that actually knows Cora and could be, you know, alarming the rest of the of that world if everybody knew that she was indeed Cora. I don't know. It's kind of, yeah, you're right. I was a bit underwhelmed, but perhaps there's more to come. I hope so, because I definitely think it's an interesting story.
I also hope there would be more about Miller's daughter. So that's what I hoped for. It was the Queen of Hearts. Now we finally get to know what happened to Regina when she was little, but no.
You can't do everything in just one episode of 42 minutes.
Yeah, I know, but it was called the Queen of Hearts. And I was like,
But I'm glad they didn't try, because I thought this episode was really well balanced. There were bigger issues for us to resolve. And I for one, was really, really happy they didn't leave Emma and Mary Margaret behind.
Yes.
I was really glad they wrapped that up, because I like David, was kind of thinking, are we going to be doing this dual thing all, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't say bored with it, but I was done. It was a nice device. Okay, let's go.
Absolutely. Like, are they going to leave Prince Charming asleep for the entire rest of the season?
And what a good resolution, though. I mean, when she the motion was there, the acting was excellent.
It was great.
The first thing she was like, "Where's my husband?" And she ran to him, and it was a very fulfilling moment. And the dialogue paralleling what she said, he said when he woke her up. You know, I kept waiting for him to say, "Truth be told, something gave me pause." And then when he said it, was like, "Yay!"
I have to confess, I had a lump in my throat at the end. I was like, "Wow, this is so cool."
the whole ending left me just breathless, breathless, and without jumping right to the end too much. Regina, oh my gosh, that's all we have to say is Regina.
This whole episode,
amazing. We've seen like both extremes of her character in one episode, which was amazing. She's this cold-hearted, mother-killing, evil person. Well, there's a little bit of love for her mother left, but, you know, apparently that's dangerous to her. And then at the end, we see the total opposite of there, where she almost kills herself, willing to sacrifice herself to save Emma and out of love for Henry.
Her own heart is just broken at the very end.
Pain.
So will she be evil?
I mean,
we saw kind of a glimpse in the preview where she's fighting with Emma over Henry.
Shh.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's no problem.
Sorry. But if you see the episode, you saw that.
The both of you are on the same microphone, so we can hear everything that happens there.
You can hear it when I whisper to her, huh?
Like this.
the episode titled "The Queen of Hearts." Of course, initially you think this is all going to be about Cora. It's going to be one of those backstories of Cora. But in a way, I think the emphasis should be Queen of Hearts, because this episode is all about hearts. Where is your heart? How strong is your heart? Do you have faith in your heart? What can a real, you know, heart filled of love? What can that do? Is it a threat? Is it a strength? And ultimately, what will determine what a savior is? What makes a savior? Isn't it the heart? Isn't that, you know? There's so many great connotations with that whole thematic, including Christian ones. With the, you know, in Catholicism, we have this whole imagery around the Sacred Heart of Jesus, which is, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen one of those statues, kind of like what. They don't make them today that much anymore, but in the 50s, it was a very popular devotion where Jesus would be presented as the Savior, but, you know, showing his heart. And it was through that love, basically, the heart as a symbol of love, that he was able to save, even in the depths of death and what seemed to be a defeat. And I see very strong, similar themes in this episode, and I love it for that, because I think it's a very fundamental thing in our human experience as well, is, you know, love that can make you very vulnerable, but ultimately isn't it by love that we win, and it's all about faith as well. It's just this time and again, this question is is coming back is, do you have enough faith? Do you have what it takes? And do you believe that good is ultimately always going to win from evil? And that's kind of, that seems to be the big mechanic of the whole show. It's like, yeah, we kind of know and we hope that good will always win. But we're in a world where that is not necessarily always the case. It's a broken world. So it's not an ideal world. So does that magic formula still works? And so it has to be proven time and again. Well, let's go back to the beginning of the story. So we see that Regina makes a deal with Hook and asks Hook to kill her mother, which is quite something, because she doesn't want Cora to follow her to the world without magic. It made me think of the thing that happens in season one, where Regina orders the huntsman to kill Snow. Did you get that same kind of?
Yeah, when she was ripping out the heart of her father, she also killed her father. And she also gives an explanation why she does it, because she tells Cora, you're my weakness.
She kills Henry, the father, because it's the thing she loves the most. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was fascinating when she brought Cora in. She looks at the body and she says so sadly that you've taught me well that love is weakness. And I can't have you. I had to do this because I still love you. And where I'm going, I can't have a weakness.
Yeah. But it is, it's chilling. It's scary. Mm-hmm. She looks scary in those scenes with the hair differently. And she just oozes evil and power. The acting was out of this world, because at the end of the episode, she looks so vulnerable and so genuine in the way she speaks with Henry. I was like, that is some fine acting there.
Mm-hmm. It's two completely different people.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And it's just to be able to make that transition just by acting and by your expressions, I thought it was stunning. Now, the seduction, of course, comes from, in this episode, comes again from Rumpelstiltskin, who proposes to Regina, why don't we try to put a spell on the portal so that whoever comes through gets killed, and it's going to be a win-win situation for you in any case. But if you kill Cora, then that gets rid of that problem. And if you kill Emma and Snow, you're going to be the only mother around. So that's going to be a win situation. I got a clip here, a short sound clip that Inga prepared, so to just remind us of that particular moment in the show.
We have to consider the possibility that when that portal opens, it won't be his family to come through. It'll be Cora.
What if Mary, Margaret, and Emma do defeat Cora and go through it?
Well, I believe in this world they call that a win-win.
How exactly is that?
If we stop Cora, you are protected from your mother's wrath. If, on the other hand, we stop Snow and Emma, well, you become the only mother in your son's life now, don't you?
David, did you find this believable that Regina just went with that? That she was so easily swayed?
He knew the exact right buttons to push on that one. It's in some ways it's kind of a, if you hadn't seen all of the episodes up to this point, it would have been a tough sell. But he knows the exact right buttons to push. Pretty much the only thing she has left to look forward to is Henry.
He basically...
She's got nothing left.
If we try to identify those buttons that he pushes, I guess it's... The first button is fear for her mother, fear for the power of Cora, and perhaps even fear for what Cora can do to her. And the second button is love, because she wants to, but it's not an altruistic love. It's a very egotistic love. She wants Henry. She needs Henry, but it's a kind of love that excludes others, and so it's not true love in a way. And in a way, Emma or Regina is still a recovering magic addict, so she is still very vulnerable, I guess. So it seems to work at first, but it's scary. What's in it for Rumpel? What's in it for Gold?
I don't know. Maybe he
he and Cora, maybe, you know, his main goal is still to find his son. And maybe he, I mean, doesn't want another person with power. Or maybe there's more to his and her backstory that we don't know about, which would probably be the guess.
That's my guess. Because remember, he's the one that told Regina how to get rid of Cora by pushing her through the mirror. So he definitely has a stake in getting rid of Cora. That's a big motivator.
Well, but I can understand that for him it would be a win situation if Cora dies. But if Snow and Emma die?
Emma's pretty powerful as well.
Maybe he... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
He could... Perhaps he's afraid of the power that we will discover in Emma at the end of the episode.
That's where I was going with it too.
Huh. That's pretty evil.
But Emma still owes him a favor.
Mm-hmm.
True. I'm thinking maybe it wouldn't have killed Emma. You know what I'm saying? Maybe that's part of it. I don't know, because I have a hard time believing he would willingly want to take Emma out, because I'm still seeing both sides to him.
He
likes something about Emma and want to see her succeed for herself, as we saw in their interaction later.
Well, what we're not considering is it could have just been a power play for Regina.
Well,
I was going to say a plot point out of character, but something that they needed so that they could set up for Henry to beg Regina to save them and have faith in him. And Regina would have to do that self-sacrificing act to prove to her son that she does have faith in him, that she does love him.
Mm-hmm.
So that then we could have the return of Emma and Snow, and Regina could be the hero in Henry's eyes for what, all of 15 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that seemed a little implausible there to me. Even my 10-year-old was like, oh, no, your 6-year-old daughter figured that out too, didn't she?
Yeah.
I mean, that was terrible.
Oh, she was upset. She was really upset.
Oh, really?
No, Mommy, we're not going to kill her, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, sweetie, star of the show, don't die. It's okay.
When Henry didn't invite Regina to dinner.
Oh, no, that. Yeah, she was, as a child, very upset that they didn't invite Regina to dinner. She's 6, and that just broke her heart.
Well, and it was really, that was a great moment character-wise, because she feels the hurt of being excluded is exactly what she feared, or what Rumpel makes her fear, and he rubs it in. He's like, yeah, you'd be, you know. Perhaps one day in the future they will invite you to dinner. It's like, oh, man, you're just evil.
Yeah.
They left her. They left her all alone in pain. And here comes sailing up the horizon, the mother to pick up the pieces.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Everybody, there was nobody who was specifically invited. So people just all went to a granny's, and she could also... she already feels for herself that she doesn't belong, and so
they
she doesn't go to.
They showed Henry holding her hand, and zoomed in on those two hands, and they saw him kind of not tug her along as if to say, "Come with us," but let her hand go so that he could go and embrace Emma, and that was the moment.
Yeah,
yeah,
and you know, it's in a way the consequence of her self-sacrifice. She made the deliberate decision to break that spell. And to whatever would happen to her. I mean, at one point I was like, oh, they're going to kill her off. You know, she's not going to survive this. It's going to be, you know, the end of her story. But the actual consequences are much bigger in that she loses Henry again. But at the same time, there's something beautiful happening between her and Henry. It's like this whole, you know, now I want you to believe me and have faith in me. And she does that. It's a moment of conversion or reconversion, which I thought was amazing.
And they missed a moment there, because I thought perhaps she would collapse unconscious or be affected and maybe even near death with the taking the spell, and that Henry would have to throw his arms around her and say, I love you, and kiss her.
Oh, that would have been great.
That would have been good. Yeah.
That would be the end of the entire series, probably. That would be such a nice resolution.
The other favorite moment was when Emma looked at Regina and just kind of went, your mother, you know, she's some kind of piece of work.
Yeah.
Regina just flatly delivers, indeed, I know. I thought that was a really good moment between the two of them. I thought, okay, we've got something new here.
Yeah.
Are they going to partner up? Are they going to, you know,
that's true. I didn't think of that. Are they going to partner up against Cora?
Yeah. Let's talk about the prophecy, because we go to the holding cell of Rumpelstiltskin, frantically looking for that magic ink. the ink, and we still don't know. We don't get any clue about Ursula being involved, or you know, the Little Mermaid.
Oh, that's right.
And they look for it, and it's empty. And then they find this very creepy letter with just Emma's name on it, and it's kind of scary to see that. It's like, this guy was obsessed with Emma, and I don't know.
It's crazy that he looks. What is he said? Sure, it would stick.
Yeah, that was a little bit too The Shining for me. I was
oh, really?
Well, there, you know, in the Shining, there's a little, you know, there was that one piece of paper where he just writes over and over, "All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy," over and over and over.
Oh, I didn't know that. Might have been a reference to that.
We are not doing a Stephen King podcast.
Okay, moving on.
But ultimately, we learn, of course, that was a way for him to hide the ink. And I thought it was a great, I totally didn't see that coming. That it was the magical ink that was actually just, it was right there under their noses. It's a classic. It's kind of a staple in stories like this where the solution is there and you just don't see it. And it's so obvious. Once you know what's going to happen, you're like, duh, of course. Why didn't I think of that?
I wondered, though, about Snow saying that she used to see Cora practicing her spells and not Regina practicing her spells. As a little girl, she said she used to spy on Cora practicing spells.
Did Emma say that?
No, Snow.
Oh, Snow. Okay. Oh, well,
they stayed a while at Cora's house.
Yeah, she was in the presence of Cora for a while.
So Cora must have moved in with Regina. I thought that Regina pushed her mother through the mirror pretty early into the marriage. But
Snow was still a kid, and she was there all the time. I mean, she got seduced by Cora to spill the beans on Regina's boyfriend. So, I guess I don't know. It might have been just, you know, doing the makeup magically in front of the mirror. I don't know what kind of spells they were.
And of course, Cora had a magical book, and Regina never did seem to use that book until she got into Storybrooke.
And it was only Rumpelstiltskin that taught her magic ultimately. So. Yeah, well, very interesting, of course, that we now hear from Snow that, you know, Emma was going to be the savior. That was the prophecy. And Snow kind of states it as something that everybody should know. But for Emma, it seems to be kind of like, wait, I am the savior. I don't think it has been made ever this clear to her. She always got that role from other people, from Henry most of all. But now her own mom is like, yeah, you were the savior. It was prophecy.
It's not only that, but she also feels used because she was like, oh, so before I was born, I was already made savior. So everything I ever did in my life was planned along. So it's, I did nothing myself.
In a way, it's a very interesting parallel to the whole theological discussion about predestination. You know, is our life here on earth, do we really have a free will, or is everything already planned out in advance, and are we just pawns, are we just puppets, and is the whole idea of us being able to make choices, is that just something that we imagine, and whether that is because of a certain conception of God because God knows the reasoning behind it is God knows the future, so he already knows what you're going to do even before you make the choice. So, therefore, you don't have a free will, which is kind of like a very simplified theology in a way. But you have the same line of thinking in certain areas of science where people say, well, we're just the choices that we make, we think that we make free choices, but ultimately it's all predetermined by our hormones, by our instincts, by nature, basically. And we just act upon that and we think that we are free. And I think that this is kind of the fairy tale equivalent or the story equivalent of that, where Emma is like, how free have I been all along? Was my life really mine? And it's kind of unsettling to realize that someone might have been manipulating you all your life, and that everything you thought you were creating yourself or doing yourself, it was ultimately just following the plan. And yeah, you're just being used and then you're discarded. That's the creepiest thing, besides the creepy document with her name on it. It must have been quite a shock to at least entertain the possibility that you're just a pawn.
Yeah, but this prophecy also made me wonder, because it's not only Snow who knows about it and Rumple, but even apparently Korra in another world. She just spells out to Hook what's going to happen, and that the curse would do, and that you wouldn't remember yourself, and that it only would last 28 years. I was like, how does she know that?
Right.
That's true. Yeah, she apparently knows that after 28 years. I wonder where that prophecy ultimately comes from.
From Rumple.
She would have had to know about the. I mean, Rumple's been trying to make this curse for years, and so she would have had to know about this before she got pushed into the mirror. Maybe that was another reason for her to get pushed in the mirror, because she knows too much.
Maybe Rumple tried to use Korra the way he used Regina to enact the curse by killing the thing she loves most, and she couldn't do it.
Maybe that was Regina.
She's talking about is she couldn't sacrifice her daughter Regina.
Could be.
The curse for Rumple.
The only thing that seems to be unpredictable is ultimately love. It's the only thing that Rumple says that he has no power over. So he might have power over people, and he might use a lot of them by sheer manipulation as pawns, but apparently he can't get a hold on Emma's heart, and just like Korra can't get a hold of Emma's heart. I thought it was beautiful imagery to illustrate something very profound, and that is that love, in a way, is unstoppable. And cannot be taken away. Whatever else you can do, you can put someone in prison, you can try to kill someone, but you can't really control love, that because it's based on freedom. And that is the moment. That was this beautiful moment where you see in Emma's eyes, again, great acting, that she thinks, now I'm done for, you know, she's going to rip out my heart. And then you see her thinking is like, she can't get to my heart. And then the moment she realizes that she is in control of her love, of her heart, and thereby in control of her life and her choices, that's where you get that shockwave that just pushes the Korra away. And Korra is like wide eyes, is like, what is happening? it's very unusual for something to happen that she didn't predict or didn't control. And can't control. I thought it was amazing. And even Rumple at the end, or Gold, seems to be almost respectful in the way that he talks about that. You know, you did that by yourself. That was your magic. And yeah, I got some. It made me think a lot about themes in the Harry Potter saga. If you've read the books or watched the movies, it's very similar. Where they constantly, I mean, there's a lot of magic in and wand waving in Harry Potter, but the one of the most fundamental messages in that J.K. Rowling tried to convey through that story is that ultimately all that magic, it's just superficial. It really doesn't change things for real. It ultimately, the biggest magic, the oldest form of magic that traditional magic doesn't have a grip on, is love. And it's love in its purest form, which is self-sacrifice. And it's by that ultimately Harry Potter saves the world, and that is, I think, is very biblical, very very true. And I love the way that Once Upon a Time kind of takes that same theme and those same truths and puts it in the context of a whole different story and connects its. It's kind of like the binding force between all these very different fairy tales. It's ultimately all these fairy tales resonate with us because they're all about the same themes. It's all about love and sacrifice and betrayal and faith. And I just love how that can just keeps fueling these episodes. Just like love in real life, right? You know, you can never get enough of it. I think it's time to play a little sound clip, and this sound clip reveals us, or reminds us of a very tragic event in the first season that we all witnessed.
I'm really glad you came to your senses.
Let's just get this over with.
It's right through here. Ah, yes. Should suit our purposes, no?
How much do we need?
All of it.
How are we going to do that?
With a little help from a fairy. Dead one. Believe me, no one mourns her.
No one mourns the fairy that he killed. I assume that he's talking about the fairy that he killed in the episode with Cinderella, right?
Yes, blue fairy.
Why wouldn't anyone mourn her? I still mourn her. It's like that was the most cruel moment in season one.
It was. Wasn't that also the same fairy that gave Balefire the magic bean?
No, there's two different fairies. One was the fairy godmother.
Oh, okay.
But
the fairy godmother. Yeah.
Why does he hate that fairy so much? I don't understand.
Season 4, maybe season 5, we'll find that out.
Oh, that could be the case. Yeah, there might be more to those fairies. Perhaps they're not as good as we think they are. Ooh, that would be interesting.
Well, they can be kind of we've seen that they can be kind of manipulative.
Yes.
At least the blue fairy was manipulating the other one.
There might be more backstory to that, but
there's a hierarchy in there.
It's very cool. I wonder if they pre-planned this in season one, but to just because we know that at the time we were like, "Wow, he just kills that fairy and he wants that magic wand apparently," and then we never heard of it anymore.
And here it is back again, very in between the lines, so you almost don't notice it.
Yeah, it won't hurt. It doesn't really matter if you remember that first episode, but it was a very cool way to bring that back. And was it me or I've only seen the episode once, but when he's back in his pawn shop and he puts it in a box, did I see other wands there as well?
Yes.
Yes.
He had a collection, right?
Absolutely. Kind of makes you wonder. Remember, he was collecting different objects of power, objects of magic, and he was very much a serious collector, and that's what led him to collect true love. Finally, however it was, he recognized it in Snow and David Charming, and he knew that Emma was going to be the ultimate product, and I'm guessing he thinks that Emma's what's going to lead him to his son.
Yeah.
Think about how old he is, Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah, that's true.
I still wonder if he can use this wand with, of course, the magic dust. Why would he need the others?
Maybe each one has different properties.
Oh, it could. Well, that could be another way. Just like in the Harry Potter world, where every wand has its own kind of skill or its own special character. That might be a case. Or there might be trophies. We might see other fairies being killed. Although there are quite a few nuns in Storybrooke, so they don't seem to be really, you know, they don't have photos of their deceased sisters in the convent. But
maybe he also is trying to take other people's power. I mean, by taking their wand, they don't have magic.
Oh, true. Yeah, he might just disarm them in a way.
Isn't that what in the beginning one of the fairies says? Without fairy dust, we cannot do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost looks like the fairy dust is another kind of magic. So he needs his magic to put a spell on the well. He needs Regina, and he also needs the extra magic from the caves, from the mines. So it's like kind of adding up magic enough to collect enough magic to do something big.
Well, and that's the difference between, let's say, magic and love in this episode. It makes it real clear that with the, let's say, the fairy tale magic, you always need stuff. You need, let's say, primary material, whether it is a wand, a tool, fairy dust. Whereas love seems to be an inner magic, something that is really yours, and it doesn't need any other external tool or extension or whatever to be exercised. So even in that way, love is already kind of stronger and more special and more, let's say, fundamental than all the other magic that we see. It doesn't involve potions or anything. Love potion number 9, perhaps, but only in songs. Let's talk about Cora's heart, because we're being... Oh, before that, let me... there was one thing that I was wondering about, and I wanted to ask Deborah. I wasn't sure if she was going to be on the episode, but she has to work at Disney, so I'll ask her later. But did you notice that when Henry is reading stories to Charming, which I thought was charming that he did that, just like he did when... he made Snow do the same to Charming when he was in coma in season one, so this was kind of a repeat of that. In the background, you see a lamp, and it's in the shape of a teapot. Does that refer to Belle and the Beast?
I think so.
Because we see candles.
We saw Belle in the very beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
Hook came to Belle mm-hmm. to try and figure out what she knew yeah. about how to kill Rumpelstiltskin, and when she honestly didn't know anything, because we never saw anything that implied she knew about the knife. He was going to kill her, and Regina's the one that stopped him. And I thought that was a great answer to last week's question of how did Hook know how to take a heart? I mean, his hook was actually enchanted by Regina to kill Cora. It can only take one, and she wanted him to go and take Cora's heart. And when he tried, he couldn't. But then he still had the magical ability to take a heart, and he remembered that and used it to take Aurora's so that he could get back in favor with Cora, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought that was a good explanation to our questions of last week.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, we did get a few more questions answered.
I also wonder something else about Cora not having a heart. So she keeps away. She doesn't really have a heart, but she loves Regina. She indicates multiple times that she really, really loves Regina, but she acts in a very strange way to show the love. And I wonder if that has to do with the fact that she doesn't have a heart in her body anymore, so she cannot listen to her heart anymore. Mm-hmm. Whereas Regina is a little bit in the same boat. So she loves Henry. Mm-hmm. And and she wants to get into Henry's book, and she listens to her heart, and therefore changes hearts really as well, and removes the spell. So, is that kind of the how you can see that Cora doesn't have a heart anymore, mm-hmm. so she cannot also not listen and cannot make the right decisions that way.
She doesn't have access to that special magic that only a heart can generate. Hey, I waved a magic wand, and look who's joining us. Deborah.
Hi.
Hey, Deborah.
I don't know if I have my settings up yet, but I'm here.
You sound great. You sound absolutely great. I thought you were working at Disney.
I'm supposed to be at Disney in about an hour, so...
Okay.
I can't stay for long.
Well, you know, any minute we can have you on the show, it's bonus. So was that a reference? Was that a teapot, do you think, from the Belle and the Beast story in the background? Did they somehow get
it
that?
It could very well be. You know how they love to use that kind of imagery just to, you know, get people like us.
Yeah, I was like, that can't be there. I've never seen that lamp before, but it was pretty cool.
Ticking off a clock in the background all the time in that room as well.
Oh, I didn't notice that. A ticking clock.
Yeah.
The spinning wheel.
It could be a symbol of, you know, the fact that the clock is stopped and then ticking. But it also could be a crocodile thing. You never know.
Who knows? Or a reference to Pinocchio. All right, there are lots of clocks in Pinocchio as well.
That's true.
And since that is all in Rumpelstiltskin's pawn shop. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he just gathered his junk from all over the place, from every single Disney movie available to him. Here's an interesting jingle or a little sound clip from the whole question about Cora's heart.
I'm the queen of hearts. Do you really think I'd be so careless as to keep my heart where everyone else does? This... is how it's done.
This is how it's done. Quite scary moment there. What did you think, Deborah, about Wonderland and that moment that we get the reveal who the Queen of Hearts is?
This is just my theory. Because last week, I know you guys did the episode and I wasn't able to join too. And I was saying that Cora is the Wicked Witch too from Oz.
Mm-hmm.
And I still actually believe that. I think Cora can be the Queen of Hearts and can be a Wicked Witch in Oz. Because she's a, you know, a world jumper.
True. Yeah.
So she could be like Rumple and have like five different personalities.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. But, you know, it didn't surprise me that she was the Queen of Hearts. I was just like, I knew it. So
I didn't see the fact that she didn't have her own heart anymore. I didn't see that coming.
No, I didn't either. No. Oh, and what did you think about Mulan having to put back Aurora's heart?
Well, I do have I know they tried to get that done expediently. I really do. But, okay, Hook had to have an enchanted hook to take out a heart, and only one. Mulan wasn't enchanted. So how could she just, like, squish that heart back in?
Well, she had the enchanted sword that deflected magic. Maybe it rubbed off.
She gave it to Emma, right?
Yeah.
But maybe you don't need one. Maybe you don't need power to put it back in.
That's what I thought. I was like, you need magic to take it out. But then when you want to bring it back, it's like a magnet. You know, as soon as it is close to the other magnet, it just jumps out of your hand and it's like, poof, it's back.
Clicks into place.
Well, like Frankenstein was working with hearts. He was able to shove it back into other bodies. It didn't work very well, probably because those hearts weren't meant for those bodies, but you can do it.
I would give anything to see the outtakes of the two actresses doing that and trying to get it right. And the expressions on their faces and the fake look of horror when they look down and then look at each other and laugh. You can almost see the outtakes on the DVD set coming.
It was a great reveal story-wise that you can actually put a heart back. So not all is lost. And we know that Regina and Cora, they have this big collection of hearts, so there's still hope for some of these people.
I hope they keep a good catalog of hearts, so you don't mix things up.
You don't get the wrong one, yeah.
That would be interesting. What would happen if we got the wrong heart in the wrong pot?
You might get a different personality, I don't know.
But I was happy to see that Hook, that she didn't take his heart. I was thinking, really? You're just going to take his? I mean, is that... I don't know. It's kind of a plot device that I was like, really? I don't really need to see that happen again for Hook. So I was glad that she said, no, my daughter would be able to tell, and I need her to trust you. So I liked that.
But you know what else was interesting? Hook watched Rumpelstiltskin take Mila's heart and destroy it. So he knew. He knew about the hearts. And so I wonder from his perspective what it was like to have her hand in there squeezing him and feeling the pain and knowing that Mila experienced that exact same thing.
Yes.
Would that have just redoubled his animosity and his revenge toward Rumple?
Well, also, did he have that same feeling now towards Cora? But he's a pragmatist and trying to get where he needs to go.
I love the way Hook seems to always play the double agent. And you're not quite sure where his loyalties really truly lie, except we know he wants to kill Rumple.
Right.
He's just such a great addition to the story.
Yeah. Whoever came up with the sound effects for the squish, 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 just, oh.
I'm dying to see that on the extra behind-the-scenes stuff as well.
Emma's face and squish, squish, squish. And I was like, oh, please. And then when she released her, when the magic, the love of strength and the magic blew Cora back, the look on Emma's face was priceless. It was like she woke just, oh, what was that?
Did that come from the necklace or from her heart?
From her.
I know, but it looked like it was a sonic wave emanating from the necklace.
Oh,
now,
I didn't.
You know what? The necklace that she wears, not the one that actually has the swan on it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the part of the keychain that Neil gave her?
Yeah, I think so.
Because I know you can buy it. I've seen the ads for it all over the place online.
Hmm.
But that it caught my eye after he gave her the keychain that had the swan.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if that she's wearing that around her neck, and that's the one that hangs lower. Almost down in towards her heart. So that could maybe represent her love for Neil.
Hmm.
Ooh. So maybe love is strength. If we reunite her and Neil turns out to be Bay, and then Henry, boy, this trio could be very, very powerful.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And they're sure taking a long time to get there from
New York
where
City.
Where was he? New York City to Maine? How long does that take?
A couple, probably like 6 hours on train. I don't know. 4 hours?
Half a season? Who knows?
Well, now, how long has it been? Like, think about that. How long has it really, how long have they really been trapped in, whatchamacallit, fairy tale land? I mean, has it been a week? Has it been 2 weeks?
It's got to have been at least a week because we had the whole wolf thing. That was a good couple of days. And then Henry sleeping in his nightmares. That was a good couple of days. So,
okay. So maybe 2 weeks in real life time.
Well, maybe he couldn't afford a plane ticket. Had to take off of work.
Maybe he's hitchhiking.
Yeah. That's true.
Well, and we know that for production purposes, they always need to go via Canada right now because that's where the crew is. So who knows?
Well, maybe he has something else in mind. Maybe he's been keeping up and keeping tabs, and he's going to find August 1st, and he and August are working up some sort of a plan to return.
Could be.
We still haven't seen August. But then if August left, would August have been affected by the memory lapse?
No, because he
wasn't part of the original curse.
No.
But no one has tried to leave. I mean, Emma and August, as far as we know, Emma hasn't tried to leave.
We haven't seen August, right? I mean, he was a wooden boy. Geppetto was looking for him, but he's gone. We assume that he's... didn't get in a wood chipper. I mean, we assume
that is horrific.
He was the one who sent that pigeon.
Yes.
Right.
So he's here somewhere. It just hasn't been relevant to see him yet.
I look forward to that episode.
I do too.
Maybe they're saving the special effects budget for when they can have an animated wooden August.
Right.
Could be the case.
Well, yes. I can't.
But wasn't he becoming unwood again? After the magic came back because he needed magic.
He looked like a wooden boy wooden man.
Yes, he came to Storybrooke because he needed magic to stop himself from turning into wood.
Yeah.
So and there was no magic, so he changed into wood and just lay on that bed. And then magic reappeared, and then we see his eyes blinking, and then the camera pans away. So I was assuming that this was the beginning of him turning back into a man again.
That sounds plausible, yes.
The next part of the season will tell.
I can't wait.
We're going to get CGI as well, if they do it like that.
Neil, Hook, and August all in the same town. That'll be really interesting.
Mm.
Especially for Emma.
Yeah.
I really look forward to seeing how they play relationships. They've kind of moved the chess pieces around with the end of this episode. Gold with Emma, gold with Regina. He's manipulating. We talked about, seems to be a little bit in awe of what he knows Emma's going to be capable of doing. He has a favor to ask her. All of this, he's leading her to something. He's playing her, and she's figuring it out. But we don't know to what end still yet, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And Neil coming back, Cora, Hook. It's going to be a really powerful mix of character and emotion.
I think I know exactly what that favor is going to be.
Oh, really?
Rimpel asks for.
What is your
Emma
theory?
Go. That she needs to go out and look for her son.
Oh, sending.
She,
so he
she
would...
can leave the town because she's not affected by the.
Oh, good point. Good point. Emma can leave town. So can Henry. So
but
perhaps
I don't know if that was the original favor when he originally told her she'd owe him a favor. How far in advance can Rumpel see?
At this point, I think he's just kind of what. At this point, I think he's just kind of. I don't know if he can see the future anymore because the whole Cora thing and that kind of stuff kind of takes him by surprise.
Or does it? We still don't know.
And will Cora just waltz into town, or will they like secret themselves somehow? Will they disguise themselves and try and work on the fringes and come in quietly where no one really recognizes them at
first?
I
see Cora as being a big showboat. I see her, I don't know,
a big flashy entrance.
Yeah, I think she's going to make a flashy entrance for her daughter.
She's going to have some great lines, you know.
Yeah.
Mother. I mean, hello, daughter.
I can imagine that when she arrives, it's going to be so dangerous. I mean, one of the ways in which they could continue the story is that Emma just flees Storybrooke and she takes Henry with her. And perhaps they're going to try to find, I don't know. Yeah.
Going back to Tallahassee?
try to find Gold's son and
How cool would it be that she embarks for a mission to find Gold's son and then discover that's actually Neil?
Yeah, that's I'm still thinking.
Cool. Hey, we speculated about the exchange that we saw in the rain between Cora and Hook, and Hook was like, "You can't kill me." We said then that, well, perhaps Hook has hidden his heart away. Now that I've seen, now that he has discovered in this episode that that's exactly what Cora did, he might have just, you know, learned from her and is like, I'm going to do the same thing and stow it away in Davy Jones' locker, as we assumed. That would make sense. And then I wonder, so the both of them actually have their hearts hidden away. Of course, one of the things, the only way to defeat Cora is by finding that heart.
Yes,
where did she hide it? Any ideas? Is it going to be, you know, inside a monster again? Are we going to see a repeat of season one? Or is there any Disney movie or story that could give us a clue on where she could hide that? It's like they're just
kind of Horcrux, but that's something completely different.
It's bottom of the ocean with the squid ink.
What? No, you know, that's the bad thing is, like, there's, you know, I can't think of anybody who's, well, Davy Jones' locker, right?
Yes, but I'm thinking more Davy Jones' locker for Hook's heart. One thing I thought of was perhaps it's going to be in the middle of a maze, and that could be a way in which they bring another element of Wonderland back.
Yeah, but because there was already a locker, a storage place with the hearts in the middle of a maze. That's how Mad Hatter and Cora found her father, because both of them went to Wonderland to retrieve something from Cora's locker, and then got double crossed, and she and her father got out.
But was that in the middle of a maze? I don't remember that. Oh, okay.
Yeah, she blasted through that garden.
Oh,
maze.
Of course, yes, yeah. I do remember. Yeah, I do remember. Okay, well, forget about that.
To be hiding your heart there. Because it's the first place where everybody looks.
Yeah, you can just burn it down.
I think it's going to be something the writers reveal to us, and it'll be, I really do. It's going to be Hook and the knife and Cora. I'm sorry, I keep saying Hook.
Yeah.
Mr. Gold, Rumpelstiltskin, and then the knife, and Cora and the heart. And eventually they're going to figure these two things out, and there's going to be a big quest of who can get it first.
Right. It's going to be quite epic.
Neither one can be defeated without the other, without the item.
Yeah.
Maybe Cora's heart is in Oz.
Yeah, that was what I think.
Oh,
well.
I'd love that. I'd love that.
Okay, where now Osh?
Y'all are going to make me look for
Where did Tin Man get his? He was on. Sorry.
Could it be on the inside of a Tin Man?
Yeah, maybe the Tin Man. He's looking for his heart, but he has somebody else's, you know?
Oh, that'd be great.
Boy, talk about a confused schizophrenic.
Okay, I've got another sound clip here. Let's see what this is.
Wouldn't it have been easier to reconcile with her before? Her curse destroys the land?
Regina doesn't need me. Not now. Not when she thinks she's about to win. But I still have a place in her heart. And the curse won't last forever. It will end. In 28 years, there'll be a savior. And she'll break it.
28 years?
You won't even notice. You'll be frozen, like all those in this corner of the land. But when the curse ends, our quest will resume. And when it does, Regina will truly have lost everything. And then she'll need me. That's when we'll go to this new land. You'll get your revenge. And me, I'll help her pick up the pieces.
Pick up the pieces. And then we get that moment where she plants a staff in the ground and we see this big dome, very reminiscent of both the Simpsons movie and a Stephen King story about the dome, and it protects them. And wasn't there something like that in Lost as well? I don't remember.
Yeah. I was thinking the orange. Was that the orange? What movie was that? Anyway.
Orange. I don't remember Orange. But
did y'all go, oh, that's how she did that? Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and there went my theory that somehow the worlds had all collapsed and that Neverland was the island and they didn't age on the island. But no, she protected them and she froze them too.
Through magic.
That makes sense for Mulan and Aurora and why some people went to Storybrooke and some people didn't.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was very intrigued by that staff that she uses. It's a wooden staff. It looks like something that could have belonged to a shepherd, or I was thinking perhaps even, you know, the staff of Moses, which is has a very similar function in, I don't know if you've seen the Ten Commandments movie, where he plants a staff in the, almost the same way, and then the sea kind of splits apart, and so they're protected from the sea, and I'm thinking this is almost like a Red Sea moment here for this island. Is there any fairy tale that where we see a staff like that? Because I think that there must be a backstory.
Lord of the Rings.
You shall not pass.
That was my first thought was Gandalf.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, Gandalf.
Interesting. But I was like, I've never seen this thing before. Where did she find it? Yeah. Or could it be part of a magic tree? Because we know that these magic trees have all but disappeared. And so could this staff have been created out of a magic tree? Perhaps even by Geppetto? Or I'm just kind of
like been able to use it for the portal and not have to get the ashes of the other. Hmm. And but okay, since we're talking about that real quick, the bean.
Yes, the dried out bean.
I forgot the bean. Everybody, they played it so beautifully. I forgot everything. Yeah. And then there's the lake and Hook looks at her and goes, "Shall we go?" And she's like, "What are you talking about?" And he holds it up.
And yeah. I love that she's still, they're still, they walk up to the lake. She's like, "Got the lake of, what was it? Nostrus or whatever." And I'm like, yeah, no water in that. And then,
she's
know,
like, ha ha.
I know. Should have known better.
Yeah.
I gotta admit, I misunderstood this, and this might be because I'm, you know, living in Nebraska part of the time now. And I was like, are they gonna grow beans? They've got a farm.
You know, I was thinking that as well, because if he uses this one bean to go to Storybrooke, do they go back?
Do they want to go back?
I used bean.
Yeah.
And it didn't create a beanstalk. No, it opened up a portal.
Yeah, she was saying, how do they get back?
Oh.
I don't think she's worried about that. I think Cora is very focused.
Yeah, if it would be me who wanted to restore the bean, I would make sure I had some spare beans just in case.
So.
Well, but I'm sure we'll see more of that bean. I love the way we need to start wrapping up the show. Because we're already an hour in, which doesn't surprise me with this episode. There's just so much in there. I kind of love the way that the water is used both as a portal, and then also the regenerative water that can be used to revive the bean. I totally didn't think of that, but that was pretty smart.
Do you know what nostos means in Greek?
Nostros?
Nostos.
Nostos.
No, I just Googled it real quick. It means homecoming, which is kind of intriguing.
Oh, nice. The spell that is put on the well, which, by the way, was also quite surprising that the well was going to be the portal. I guess that's quite easy for, you know, just have someone climb out of it visually. It's easy, it's cheap to do that. The green color of that killing spell again was kind of like Harry Potter inspired with the Adabra Kedavra spell, which is also a green killing curse. I just didn't really understand what happened there when Regina, you know, at the very last minute decides to kind of like open or remove that spell. Is she absorbing it? What's she doing
seems like
there?
She seems like she absorbed it into herself.
Yeah.
So
looked almost like Darth Vader.
Darth Vader, that's what I was going to say.
Right.
I'm not saying anything.
I was thinking that she was going to get hurt by it too.
Well, she almost got killed. That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, what are the consequences of absorbing all that evil? Because that's evil magic. And now it's in her. Is that going to be... Is that going to damage her? I don't know.
Well, I think she had the sack to take it off and to redirect it or absorb it. But I don't think it's what's going to cause her to change any. I think that's self-sacrifice for her, the love of her son, that she was willing to sacrifice her role to him to bring back Emma and Mary Margaret. That was a huge turning point in Regina's redemption. Huge. And yet it causes her so much pain.
Yes. I love that moment.
It was the best character.
It was a true moment of conversion and one of the most touching scenes I've ever seen between Henry and Regina. I've got a sound clip here. It was such an amazing scene.
Mom, what are you doing?
We can't let Cora come through the portal. You have no idea what she would do to us.
Emma and Mary Margaret are going to defeat her. They're the ones that are going to come through.
Henry, your mother's right. It's going to be Cora.
No, it won't. Good always defeats evil. You should know that more than anyone. Emma and Mary Margaret are going to come through. I know it. You said you wanted to change. To be better. This is how. You want me to have faith in you? Have faith in me.
And that's exactly what happens. It's faith that saves Regina, but also causes her to lose what she, you know, what she values most. And so love both is saving, but it's a double-edged sword. It can also hurt you because, you know, it involves sacrifice. But I thought it was an amazing moment there. And then, of course, the other way in which the story was wrapped up was that Mulan heals Aurora. We already talked about that. And now they can go save Philip. I knew it. I knew that they were going to bring back Philip. We haven't seen him enough. And so that's going to be interesting to see how they will tie that quest together with the rest of the story. Otherwise, this could be very disjointed. Somehow this has to be kind of be connected, because now Aurora, Cora, and Hook are also in Storybrooke, and the only ones left in the bubble, as it were, are Mulan and Aurora. So I don't know how they're gonna do that, but perhaps someone needs to go back there for some reason. I don't know. And then we've got the pirate boat at the horizon. Very cool, but a bit cheesy. The special effect was quite bad. Like, wow, that boat approaches way too fast. But anyway, it looked to me like a bit of a rush job.
They jumped through the water, so.
Surprised they have a boat.
Yeah.
They probably used the lake to restore the bean, and then they went to his pirate ship, where the heck that is, and then.
Probably.
Yeah,
it felt a bit abbreviated, a bit rushed. Again, I was like, that could have used another episode.
I overlook it. It was a perfect ending. I overlook it.
True. I mean, it was the twist that you need, because otherwise, everything is too neatly wrapped up, and you don't need to go back and for the rest of the season. But still, this episode to me stood out because of the theme of true love, and there's this discussion between Gold and Emma, and I think that's a pivotal moment in at least in Emma's story arc, and this is the moment that she starts to realize that indeed she is a savior, and it's by love that she's going to save everything.
You needed to find that so all this could occur.
You created the curse, Gold. You made me the savior. So everything I've ever done, exactly what you wanted me to do.
I merely took advantage of what you are. The product of true love. That's why you're powerful. And everything you've done yourself.
So you don't know?
Know what?
Cora tried to rip my heart out, but she couldn't. She was blasted back by something inside me.
By magic. Whatever that was, I didn't do that. You did.
It's the power of love. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Anyway, that wraps it up for this episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. We, of course, will be back in the next part of the season after... when does it start again? February?
January.
Oh, so it's only a very brief interruption. Thank goodness for that, because I'm so enjoying y'all's company and, of course, the company of our listeners and the people in the chat room. So far, I've had a blast in this second season. And, of course, we hope that you will check out our main website, which is sqpn.com, where, you know, you will find the rest of the community as well as all our other shows. The Hobbit has just hit the theaters in New Zealand. We're covering that on The Secrets of the Hobbit. We're going to give our reviews and takes and reveal the secrets of that story if you are into things like that. And then, of course, I've got a weekly show called The Break, where I also talk about movies and TV shows, so you might want to check out. And, of course, that all our other shows are going to continue throughout the wintertime and throughout Christmas. You could follow us on Facebook and Twitter. All our Twitter links of also of our guests, our hosts, are going to be in the show notes that Inge is hopefully going to post. And thank you for that. And thank you for all the work that you do in preparation for these episodes, because it's a great help. And so with that, we end this show. And if we don't see each other anymore, happy Christmas, Merry Christmas, have a blessed time, a happy new year, and stay subscribed, because we will be back, and hopefully so will you. All right, and oh, by the way, before I end, we're currently doing our giving campaign, which is basically trying to find your support as a listener to help us continue our work in 2013. If you want to help out, if you want to donate, if you have a little bit of spare money in these expensive months, we would highly appreciate your support. Even if it's only a little bit, you know, we've got thousands and thousands of listeners. If everyone could help out a tiny little bit, then together, that creates magic, and it enables us to continue this work. So thanks in advance for your help. And I'm just going to play a little bit of music of the ending, and I'm wishing you all again a Merry Christmas. Any last words, panel members?
Merry Christmas. We'll see you in January.
Yep, me too.
Deborah, have a great time at Disney.
Thanks.
And thanks for joining us today. And bye-bye.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.